At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only 10 bucks every day. Now that's finger-lickin' good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.
Lowe's knows that no matter your paint project, saving is at the top of your list. That's why when you shop today, you can buy one, get one free select Valspar and HGTV Home by Sherwin-Williams one coat coverage interior paints via rebate. Shop these deals in-store or online today at Lowe's. We help, you save. Selection varies by location. While supplies last. Discount taken at time of purchase. See sales associate for details. Offer valid 8/21 through 9/3.
Coming at you live from the heart of Lincoln, America. This is Old School, sponsored by the Mercado by Certified Piedmontese, Nebraska Football Hall of Famer Jay Foreman and Austin Orman. Old School with Foreman and Orman on 93.7 The Ticket and theticketfm.com.
Thursday, Jay Foreman, DP Harrison once again on the ones and twos. We are old school on this Wednesday, Thursday. Listen, if you see Terrell Farley, 43, the black shirt, all you got to do is just ask him to shake his hand or rub a nickel for you, boy. You'd be lucky. That's my boy, though, man. Anyways, we're old school, brought to you by the Mercado, Certified Piedmontese, Special Ingredients of Butcher Shop, 84th and Havelock, 30th and Yankee Hill, 85th and Andromat / Old Cheney. And 168th and Maple up there in the O, the Metro, or whatever you want to call it. 4 locations in the great state of Nebraska and always expanding.
You all right, Jay?
No, I'm not, man. I'm not.
Finally got him fired up. Backer versus backer.
That's my dude, man. That's my dude, Farley.
I do like Farley. Farley cracks Farley, me up. Boy, he might be the funniest person.
He ain't changed.
There's nothing wrong with that dude. That is funny.
He ain't changed. Here's the thing that's crazy. He's about to be 50, but he came in school younger than me, like a younger class. So we got to have a discussion about that. But my man was Johnny on the spot, a great player. Obviously got into the Hall of Fame last year, but obviously a Hall of Fame dude as well. It's always good to see him joke him around.
Are you in your high school's Hall of Fame yet?
Probably not. Man. They like them checks, though. And then they be having the nerve to ask, like, you want to come? Nah. Number 6 put you guys on the map. I need to get that.
What high school are you from?
Eden Prairie.
Give me some alma maters. Great alma maters from there.
Number one is Sergeant Slaughter.
Sergeant Bob Slaughter.
When he went there, JD Spellman went there, and then we got a ton of football players. And then they had a hockey player that was drafted first round, won a couple Stanley Cups. But that only matters because of me.
All
them dudes that go there would never have went there if I didn't go there. I broke the color barrier going up in there, 1980 something, 90 or whatever it was. But it's all good though. I still wish them the best. I think they play Friday night when Nebraska plays Minnesota.
Oh,
I think
so. What do you do? You go into town. What do you do?
I'm going to the Husker game. These dudes ain't got me in the Hall of Fame. They need to name the field after somebody as much as I burn up. How many times we struck the band up there?
You know, this is why I ask questions, because sometimes it needs to make sense, and I need to know why are you not taking care of Mr. Foreman?
Hey man, you know sometimes, man, it's a good question,
right?
I'd rather not answer. You know what I'm gonna say? You know, Coach Grant's there, Mike Grant. He's done a really good, great job, and he's the face of the program. They still show my highlight tape, though. I know that for a fact. what's his name, dude? The dude that plays for the Vikings, he's there. And then Blake Cashman.
Okay. Emmett Johnson, Gus Mohawk pointed out, he's from your neck of the woods too, right?
Yeah. 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 And but Blake Cashman played there. Carter Coughlin, both of them played at the Gophers, and Blake has been carving out quite the career. And at the he's playing for the Vikings right now, but he did really good, played for the Texans, has done really, really good for himself. So it's always good to see guys like that make it. He started off on a walk as a walk-on at the University of Minnesota, should have been on a scholarship. There's a backstory to that that I'll keep definitely in the back pocket. That's family business, not me, but you know, what. There was a kid that got a scholarship that shouldn't. He didn't. He walked on, bet on himself. PJ Fleck, when he got the job, because Blake was thinking about transferring, I was trying to get him to come to Nebraska. And he said that, you know, the first thing I'm going to do is put you on a scholarship. And I think within a week that he put him on scholarship, I think he was all Big Ten, so forth and so on. Rest is history.
See, my high school, we have to alphabetize our alumni, notable alumni. We have to, you got to put them in different categories.
Yes.
Such other assorted whatnot. Like there's the Academy Award wing, right? Mm-hmm. Where all the Academy Award winners are there, you know, where you know, and these are some of the folks who could have been in the Athletic Hall of Fame as well. Then you have the pertinent speakers, government leaders, secretaries of state and other assorted whatnots. The other except then we have, you know, our Super Bowl MVP. Mm-hmm. And then you have those people, those playmakers in the Super Bowl, those guys, those game changers. You know, we got that section.
We got a priest section from Cedar Catholic we can highlight. Some great draft picks to the Catholicism for sure.
No, I don't know that anybody else has four Academy Award winners. Like, that's pretty impressive for a little tiny school from Arlington, Virginia. You know, not bad.
Yeah, I don't know what's up in that water, up in that Northeast region.
Greatness is in that water, Harrison Orange. Greatness. Greatness. Look, man, we gave all the – look, when you can say that Warren Beatty was your starting middle linebacker and shortstop, you know, hey man, oh, he was only be cheered on by, you had an Academy Award winning actor being cheered on by an Academy Award winning actress. You know, I mean,
you guys have like a fine arts, yeah, like really good fine arts school?
No, as well? We were an exceptional arts school is what we were. No, think about this. Look, I can say this, and it's absolutely, I had an Academy Award winning actress cheer for me. She was cheering for me. As a matter of fact, she put candy in my locker on Friday morning. So they would decorate our lockers. Mm-hmm. Jay, did they do that?
Yeah, they did. Yeah.
Yeah. So they would decorate your locker. Seniors. Right. So my locker was decorated by an academy. Like, you know, there are pictures of Sandy in my locker putting candy in there. Like, winning. Winning.
So, yes, Harrison, you went to a fine arts high school. That was fine arts high school. Mine was straight get in where you fit in.
Well, we...
scholarship or bust.
So, yeah, the weird dynamic. The public school was the fine arts school, and
We were not fine arts.
We were pretty rubbish.
We were not fine arts. We just happened to build greatness.
I was wondering if you got Jake Scott,
Jay will tell you, and we don't talk about Jake Scott enough as a great football player, but when you... when a safety wins the Super Bowl MVP, he had a game. Mm-hmm. Jay Scott was a bad dude. And if you ever saw the funny Jay, when Jake Scott took that helmet, like in the uniform, he looked like the baddest dude on the planet. Mm. He took that helmet off and you see he had that smooth, skinless, hairless middle part of his head at age 33. Jay, he had no hair in the middle of that helmet. Right. No hair. But he back there picking off Terry Bradshaw and Kenny Stabler. It's funny. And he looked that way in high school. That's what's
He was on the Dolphins, right?
Yeah, yeah. He won the Super Bowl MVP. He was I want to say he had 14 interceptions his senior year at my high school. Before he went to the University of Georgia. Yeah, he thought he was going to play quarterback at Georgia. They were like, nah, go get over there at safety.
And yeah, you're picking off 14.
Pick some passes off, bro. Go back there and defend people. But we had some Eric Sievers that Jay Foreman probably would know, tight end for the Chargers. He was the counter to Kellen Winslow on one side, Eric Sievers on the other with Dan Fouts in that offense. Reggie Harrison, who blocked the Cowboys punt in the Super Bowl, blocked it in the end zone.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that was my running backs coach in high school. Crawford Palmer, who was the starting center on that Grant Hill, Christian Laettner, Duke team, and his older brother, Walter Palmer, who was the fifth number five overall pick for the Utah Jazz at 7'1". Yeah, we had some folks come through. You can honestly say it was not bad.
Hmm.
Not bad for the smallest 6A in all of Virginia.
What was your graduating class? Pop, like size?
I want to say it's like 600.
Okay, so that's not massive, but that's
decent. We were the smallest 6A in Virginia. And Jay, it was that kind of deal. Like, we would go play against Hubert Davis and Lake Braddock. And like Braddock would bring 98 players. We would show up with 37.
Oh yeah, y'all was a small school.
Yeah, like we were. Most of our folks went play both sides of the ball. They run in fresh bodies. So for the first three quarters, Jay, we were in it with anybody in the state. Until that fourth quarter when that fatigue started to hit in. You know, you going two ways, they going one way, and got triple reserves that you have. Yeah.
You're probably going three ways. Yeah, special teams, too. Hey,
mm-hmm. I had to Google. I forgot. I didn't even know some of these dudes are from Eden Prairie. Kenny Stills from Oklahoma.
Okay. Nice.
Jermaine Johnson, I do remember him because actually Nebraska fumbled getting him. He was the first-round pick. Ended up going to Georgia, then Florida State. And then a couple esports guys and Nick Lady.
That's esports?
Nick Lady is a professional hockey player. He was like 17 and won Stanley Cup.
Remember, because you were telling me you went to the guy that would drive up to the parking lot with his brand new car, the hockey player?
Yeah, Mike Madonna. He wasn't from Eden Prairie, but he was drafted by the Minnesota North Stars then. Then he would, be out after school. I ran into him at the East-West Shrine game. Yeah, you just never know. Sergeant Slaughter, I remember I seen his big old head up in there, though.
Bob Slaughter, man, that had to be something. The greatest jaw in all sports. What a great dude. What a great dude. Well done, Jay Foreman.
And we got Olympics winners. Yeah, I know all that.
Harrison, we're going to start sending letters to Eden Prairie High.
Hey, here's the thing.
We're going to tag them on social media.
I just Googled the famous people that got me on here. They got some white dude on here. English comedian, singer, songwriter.
Another Jay Foreman.
Yeah.
Yeah, we probably do need to send some letters.
Yeah, we do.
Oh, man.
Yeah, Mark LaVore. I used to babysit him. Oh, I wouldn't call him famous. I'm just playing. He's a good dude. He went to Notre Dame, though.
Oh, that's why
he gets hate.
That's so good.
Why he gets hate.
That's fair enough. Notre Dame is.
No, it's fine. It was good. He was a good player. I think he played in the league a couple years.
Are you excited, though? It's preseason. We got three games tonight.
It's going to be interesting, man.
Three games tonight.
Yeah, you got games tonight, and then Cleveland's doing what Cleveland does.
They're interesting.
They just said, you know what? The owner says I didn't want to draft him, and they say, we're gonna stay. I just wonder why you try when you're crappy like Cleveland. Okay, number one, you gave Deshaun Watson $250 million of free money.
Yeah, saved the
Houston. So he's not even around. Okay, and then you draft Shedeur Sanders in the fifth round after you drafted somebody in the third round. Your owner says I wasn't a part of it. You know damn well you in the meetings in the war room. Okay, and then you have some injuries or whatever, and Joe Flacco is going to be your starter. Okay, this is what you're selling to people. Then you say, okay, Joe Flacco is not going to start. We're going to start Shedeur Sanders, but we're going to start you and only let you practice with the ones once. And when they practice, it was like a walkthrough. So why, what, like, why would you try so hard to set a dude up that for failure if you didn't even want, why even draft him? You could trade him right now because somebody needs a quarterback. Heck, Teddy Bridgewater just signed with Tampa Bay. Mm-hmm. So you could have let him, like, this is what you're doing as a billionaire owner? I mean, because it's your decision. You're the owner.
Oh, I don't, the Browns make the most, I don't know. They make zero sense to me because it's not about winning and it's,
and
the marketing point is really bad too. If it's for marketing, it's like you're not setting up Shador to, for great success here. And if you're trying to make money off Shador, not really care about the wins.
Who else is going to do it that they're going to make money off?
Dylan Gabriel. I don't know. Like I don't know what the Browns' plan is at all.
I don't think they have one. That they need to move again.
Where would they move to?
Whoever in the next expansion, they need to move because they're not representing the original Cleveland Browns. That was a. The Cleveland Browns was like an original, you know, blue blood franchise.
Mm-hmm.
You know, NFL was built with the Cleveland Browns, and they just, and it's, this isn't even about Shador. You can just talk about, you know, drafting Johnny Manziel. Then you draft the dude from Oklahoma State that's like 28 years old. And then as soon as he doesn't do good, you get rid of him. And then you turn around and draft Baker Mayfield and then say his arm strength is bad after he played a whole, led you to the playoffs with a torn rotator
cuff. And won a playoff game.
Yeah.
He won
a torn rotator cuff, mm-hmm. And they were in the game against Kansas City Kansas City. And you're like, all right, you got bad. Your arm strength ain't that good. And he played with a torn rotator cuff. You don't have any zip on the ball. So you get rid of him, send him into the abyss. Then you turn around and give Deshaun Watson $225 or $50 million after he was, Houston sent him home and paid him and kept him on the active roster. And then you turn around and give him get fully guaranteed.
That's what I don't. What were the Browns thinking in that situation? Like, it's not that bad. Like, that is a crazy move.
Oh, they just joking?
Well, I don't know if they were just like, we're super foolish and we're like, we don't think it's that big of a deal. Like, it'll blow over.
And then the details came out
and it was like, what'd you guys
do? They thought they were in the armpit of America. Oh, they won't come here and ask any questions. They won't come to Cleveland. They don't have any direct flights. Man, their people was in there from the droves. And then the best part is, I doubt the head coach wanted him because they didn't even run an offense that's suitable to Deshaun Watson's skill set. When he was pushing Patrick Mahomes for the MVP at one point in time. At one point in time, they were saying that he was better, and obviously it was a different parts of their career. It was more like the RPO type of what he did in Clemson, and now you want him to be like a West Coast. You got the head coaching job. You hired the coach that coached Kirk Cousins in Minnesota's offense. And then you give them a quarterback that runs something totally different. But you're telling people that we're trying to win. Like when you have fan day or whatever, yeah, we're trying to win. No, you ain't. You'll be picking number one next year. So whoever is it, who is it, the guy from Clemson?
Yeah, Klubnik.
Yeah. You're up next, buddy. Whoever it is. Who is it, Kate Klubnik?
Yep.
Arch?
Arch Manning. I can see the Browns just.
Oh, listen. I can guarantee Peyton, Eli, Cooper, and what's the grandfather's name? Archie Manning.
Arch.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Archie. They go like, no. He definitely is not getting drafted by Cleveland. They will must wake.
Well, he said they're skipping the draft. They're skipping next year's draft.
Yeah, you want to know why? So you know why Cleveland. He did that?
Cleveland.
Yeah. He said, why would you? You already got family legacy money. You're probably going to get, if he does decently well, he's going to get an upgrade in money at Texas. So why would you even risk that the Cleveland Browns would draft him? His career would be over.
Oh, that's crazy. That is just it.
And you know he called the NFL and said, listen, you know he's not going to Cleveland. So Cleveland's going to be the worst team. I don't care if they got Myles Garrett. They're not winning. He's not going. We're just going to stay here.
What if it's Panthers?
He would probably go there.
Jaguars?
I think he would. I think
Browns like the one where you're just avoiding at all costs. Is the only one.
Whoever's coaching and the rest of the season matters. It'll shake out.
They could force them to fire. They can't probably won't fire Jacksonville's coach, but he's an offensive coach. This is what people don't understand about the. It's a perfect example. The Mannings could manipulate the draft and tell you what they were going to do. That we're not going to San Diego. San Diego's ownership had some issues, but then he went to the first class organization, the Giants. Deion tried to do it, and they're like, "Oh no, I'll play him. Not right now." But now with Arch, it's about ownership. These guys, they know what happens on the field 99.9% of the time starts at whoever the owner is. Mm-hmm. Because it's like water that goes through the foundation. It just seeps down in there. Now, some of it's like a dam and just comes straight down there, but it seeps down in there. How the owner treats people, how he views how to do business on a day-to-day basis goes into who he hires as a GM or a CEO, CFO, and then it goes into the head coach, and it's the standards that's already there.
Necessary information. It's the business is changing.
Yeah.
Access to information certainly is changing it, right? Because now you can communicate more frequently and more easily with those people.
From college to pros.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah, interesting times.
These athletes have a really, I hope they use their, I guess, stature, brand, power the right way. As long as you do it on the field, you have their eye, you have their ear, and you do it right off the field. And I think with Arch, which is different, it's kind of like the first family. You've seen it done with Archie. You've seen it done with Peyton. Then you saw it with Eli. So it's an easy investment, and it's sellable. Nothing can rehab the Browns except for potentially a change in ownership. The only way you'll lose an NFL franchise if you do what Daniel Snyder did and tell on everybody and then threaten everybody and have them follow. He had owners followed. And like, those are just really like, because they could get mad at each other. Like they were mad at Jerry Jones for a while, right? Because he'd run his mouth and doing some stuff. But they got it. All right, man. They got together on their, million-dollar yachts and had a couple drinks and got it together. One got on a helicopter, flew back to land. It's cool, right? But if Cleveland stuck because of things that are out of the player's control. And that's what people don't understand. It's just that it starts at the top, man.
Yeah, I mean, that's Baker Mayfield's situation. They finally had a road out. And they turned around.
And he's lucky, man, he's lucky that he got to the Rams.
Yeah.
Played well under not ideal circumstances.
What, did he have like 24 hours once he landed?
Resurrected his career. And then he went from he's a bust, and then everybody kind of felt sorry for him. And then he rode that into the bank. And now look at him down in Tampa. They're like, all the leadership's good. He's the same dude that he was in college.
And Tampa's probably one of the – you could probably know better than I do, but it feels like one of the best-run organizations or one of the better-run organizations in terms of how they treat their players.
But that changed when they got Tom Brady. Probably before, but, you got to think, Tampa at one point in time, they had staff – infection, and so they had it. They had some lean times, but they worked at it though. They actively worked at it. The Glazers actively worked at it. Jason Light and them, and they kind of did it. It is what it is. I mean, on the flip side, real quick, DP. Mm-hmm. I know you obviously Sterling Sharp went into the Hall of Fame, and one of his things that he was saying that when he got hurt, I watched the game when he got hurt, or both of them. That nobody from the Packers called him. Now, on the flip side, of all people, Mark Shimura said, which is true, he was above everybody else. He knew it. He pretty much said he was a horrible teammate. That's why nobody called him. I would have still called. I've had some bad teammates, and they got hurt. I still called him. But there's probably more to the story. Why? What people don't understand, once you get hurt, in the NFL, like, look at what happened to Peyton Manning in Indianapolis. He's a top 10 quarterback, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
They shipped him out quick. They do not care.
Well, the business has to go. It's the old North Dallas 40 line. When one calls it the business, one calls it a game. When you call it a game, the other one calls it a business.
Yeah,
it's constant in that you're dealing with that dilemma. And the players, there are times you want it to be a game. There's times when you want it to be business, and you have to act accordingly. Well, for the administrators, teammates, coaches, sometimes the game needs to be treated as business and vice versa.
Yeah.
It doesn't always fit your particular want and need for that particular moment.
Yeah, it's just, I mean, it, you know, it was a lot different back then, and obviously, but, you know, it's, the show must go on, and the pros, they do not care. I mean.
And it's funny, too, because Sterling is likable.
Now, not before, though.
Well, he.
Not before, DP, I could take 1,000, but not before. Yeah. And I think that, but also. Is it totally his fault? You know,
being he was a country boy. He was super country boy. Right,
totally his fault. In Green Bay, didn't really have anybody to mentor him, and then you blow up, and you know, then it's a lot. You know, so it's not really totally his fault. But Mark Shemora, of all people, was no. That's the last person.
It was who was running back on that team? Was that the?
They weren't very good back then. Remember, it was all like Vince Workman. And all those dudes.
I met him through Don Majkowski.
Vince Workman?
No.
Sharp. Yeah.
And then he would come. He would always be at the Hootie events in Myrtle Beach. And in that environment, he was as cool as the other side of the pillow after the game, right? Humbling.
Yeah.
The humbling that happened.
Yeah, I think, yeah.
But he and his brother were country boys. And I don't mean country in that cool kind of way. I mean, Geechee, South Carolina country, where outhouse, but he tells a story that, listen, we were out there in them fields, man. That's how we had snack money, was to go get out in the field and pull alfalfa with your bare hands in 100 degrees. Those are different folks altogether.
Yeah. Yeah. I've met him a couple of times. He was always, you know, cool, but I know that, like, while he was playing, it was a little different.
Yeah.
But you know, that's anybody. You catch somebody on the wrong day.
You caught Farley on the wrong day today.
Yeah, he always,
sir. Sir,
I told Farley, man, sir, I'll fold you up like a fourth grade love letter, man.
Sir.
So, anyways, we'll take a quick
Harrison
break. Come back,
Arnes.
I know, isn't he? We're gonna talk a little bit.
Stoke the fires. Bro.
We're gonna talk a little bit. NFL news with preseason. What to expect? Obviously, Ty Robinson's about to get busy with the. Defending champs. Jay Foreman, DP, Harrison, we'll be right back.
Back to Old School with Foreman and Orman on 93.7 The Ticket and theticketfm.com.
What up, we're back. Jay Foreman, DP, Harrison. Two more segments before we jump into Thirsty Thursday with my man Kevin Meyermeyer, Cork and Bottle, 13th and South. A lot going on. You got NFL preseason tonight, so... you know, for these guys that are from Nebraska, either that got drafted or getting the chance, you know, it's their first time of, you know, going out and being an adult. because, you know, you're not going to, when you go through and you run out to the stadium, it's not like they used to get at Nebraska.
Yeah.
You got to be self-motivated. You got to be focused and you got to be driven. And you know, it's a business. I mean, like DP says, you're playing for a check. So the great thing about it is that, you know, hopefully you've done enough in practice. I know there's not four preseason games like it used to be. So hopefully, you know, in all these different situations that, you know, you'll be able to get a lot of tape. If you don't make it there, you'll be able to make it somewhere else. So, but it's definitely a unique time. They all should be excited and be interested to see how they, you know, do when it comes cut time, whether it's practice squad or active roster.
What are you really looking for when you watch preseason?
Well, they don't really play the starters, but mm-hmm. you know, it'll let you know a little bit on depth. But if they do play good on good, you know, maybe seeing for young players that they, you know, possibly you're going to work in. You know, it's like, you know, you're able to see a lot more of the co-practices they do.
Yeah.
And that's probably like the biggest tell that lets you know they pretty much play a game, situational football, good on good, a lot more in practice than they do in the game. So I think the preseason is just for guys that you want to make a team, which is, you know, in our case, all the Nebraska players, you want to see them get in, you know, play well and get a lot of tape. You don't learn much out of the preseason anymore.
Is it really, I mean, is it a chance for, so would you have had the same chance to excel now as you did then with the way camps are running now? You would have had fewer opportunities to show up, right?
Well, they put a big emphasis on, you know, the practices against other teams. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, my chances would have been just as good. The difference is, you know, I don't know if they share practice tapes because then you're sharing your mm-hmm. plays. So realistically, it's probably a little bit harder. I mean, now granted, I think, you know, when I was at Buffalo, one of the first things they said, John Butler, the GM, was like, you young guys are going to play. And, you know, if you don't make it here, we like to keep everybody in-house with the practice squad and everything. And so you'll put on a lot of tape. So if it's the same situation, I feel like my tape would have been good. But it wouldn't have been four games. And so, you know, your first game, you're kind of just tiptoeing around. And then, you know, your second game, you want to see a, you know, uptick in playing. And then the third game back when I played is the hardest because I wasn't a starter yet. And so the starters play three quarters. So you're getting in just on special teams, sitting around for 15, 20 minutes, a punt, sit around for 15, 20 minutes, halftime, run down on kickoff. Hopefully you get them to return it and maybe be able to make a tackle, sit for another 15 minutes. And then you know what? Now you got to go out there and ball out for the last quarter.
To then, be seen and otherwise. But here's what we were talking about the other day was, is there now a limit, like a cap, a number cap, a percentage cap of hitting to the, you know, take it to the ground type of hitting in camps?
Yeah, I mean, just doesn't matter if you're co-practicing or whatever. I think the NFL rules of however many padded practices you can have, how many practices you can have back-to-back, mm-hmm. and they do get a true off day. So, like I told you yesterday, like, you know, Denver pulled the plug real quick. It's like, you know, Mike Shanahan was like, oh, I need these guys, you know, for the rest of the season. Dom Capers was like, I want to practice every day of the week. And an off day back then was essentially meetings all day, high-speed walkthroughs, and then another regular walkthrough. Now, you'll see it on Hard Knocks. These guys will be at home, you know, for a day, a true day off. So they've relaxed the rules. They don't hit as much. They don't practice as much in the off season. You truly aren't obligated to be there, you know. Required, unrequired time off season workouts. But I would always tell players, like, this is your job, and every city that you're in is a big city, and so you'd rather, the more they see you, the more they like you, and the more that you'll bring up, you know, build that equity. Now, granted, if everything's equal, a guy that's committed being around versus a guy that's not, they're going to go with the committed guy. And so, you know, being in Buffalo or Houston or anything like that wasn't a problem for me in the offseason. But they get a lot more time off.
And how does that play out for Nebraska, their summer camp?
Well, I think NCAA rules they can't hit as much. And so I think,
you know. Like, is there a number? Do they tell them how many days they can go full?
I don't know. I don't know what the number is, but I'm sure, you know, it's not. I mean, look, I think when I saw them on the internet, they were, you know, and like spiders. And the first day with Coach Osborne, you going live, full pass, right out the rip, 7 o'clock in the morning practice.
Let's go.
Yeah. Good morning, my friend. You going 2 days? I think when Coach Osborne, when we were, I think we might have went like 14 days of 2-a-days. Wow. And then, we'd go full pads once, half pads. But again, it's about practicing. I mean, I don't know if we went a lot of live, like, tackle today. We did some. But, you know, if you're working on cut blocks with linemen, you got to have your, you know, knee pads and thigh pads in. I know that nobody wears them now. And then, we probably like to think that we practice just as physical in half pads and full pads. So it really wouldn't have mattered. I think, you know, like we talked about some yesterday, I think if you are physical and it's a mentality that you built up all off season and just who you are in day-to-day life. Now, granted, having pads on is different, and that's more of a leverage thing and a commitment thing. But I think if you're physical and you're committed, then it's not really going to affect how you practice.
So you're saying that the defensive team wanted full pads and the offense was cool with shells?
They never wanted to do it. Offense always had excuses. And then they also had Coach Osborne dictating when they, you know, he never, you know, he'd make sure they were successful. And you know, linemen back then, you know, they cut block you, and then you're playing a cut block, then they blow you, or they just Peter roll you up out of there. So
knee to the head.
Yeah.
Knee to the head. Go and put it down there.
Yeah, and they tried to punish you back then, too.
Go and put that helmet down there. Yeah, let me run this knee and fully knee pad across it.
Well, you if, against a cut block, a guy, you got to take, like, the hard part of your hand here. And you got to punch him in the head with it. And then they won't cut block.
See, and you notice how quickly he found that hard spot on the palm of his hand.
Yeah.
He knew exactly what needs to land.
Yeah, if we get cut a couple times, you're going to figure out. You have to discourage them from doing it.
Without saying it.
Yeah, you got to, you know, like, I'll even say it. When I played against Marcus Pollard, and he cut me one time, I kicked it. Like, I just accidentally... Like the Ndamukong Suh, I had to remove my foot from his face mask.
He Randy Orton punted.
No, I wanted to, you know, but it happens. I mean, it's more of a position blocking game right now. But we play against dudes back when I played, man, they tried to punish you.
Sometimes they, you know, are asking for it.
Because the reason why they tried to punish you, because they wanted to sit in their meetings and laugh. Just like DBs. Like, this is the difference between the NFL, and at least from my experience in college. Like, there was guys that would, like, if you played in Nebraska, you had to tackle. But you get these little DBs in the league. They love interceptions. They love pass breakups. But they trying to blow – if they blow somebody up, that's why you see them up here celebrating and doing all that stuff. They live for that. A guy named George Wilson tried me down in Miami, tried to get me on the sneak, and he jumped and tried to hit me, and I actually caught him and powerbombed him.
Did you ever hear hold somebody, Deacon Jones?
I've had some big hits. I don't think I've hit anybody when they weren't looking.
Like that open-handed smack.
Oh, you mean like the head slap? Yeah, but it wasn't, you know, like Deacon Jones. He would be suspended right now.
Harrison, as painful as there is.
Yeah. I played with a guy named Daryl Porter, a little DB. He actually was from Boston College. His son's Daryl Porter Jr. He coached Patrick Surtain Jr. and his son Daryl Porter Jr., who's with Buffalo. That's who he coached in high school. Those are his two corners. But he would hit you though. And he would tape his forearms all the way literally up to his elbow. But then when he had this, like, so in the league, like, if you know how they have those wrist guards now?
Mm-hmm.
So they just would take plastic, heat it up, form your whatever position they wanted your wrist in and do it. So he had it.
The plaster of Paris.
Plaster right here on his forearm. Yo.
Oh.
When he used to hit cats with that forearm, he was dropping them like they were getting tasered.
It's the old-fashioned thing that used to be under your cast. The stiff part.
Yeah.
And then they'll wrap the gauze and stuff around it.
So is that what Glover was doing back in the day, or was his just straight tape?
They were the Raiders. Phil Villapiano tells the story that their MVP, their Super Bowl year, was the equipment guy. Because he would soak the gauze in this plaster of Paris mix, and then he would wrap the forearms, and Villapiano would just come up and just him and Matuzak and company, man, they would just throw that forearm at you.
I mean, DP, we call him DP. He'd come down there and somebody try to block him on like kickoff. It was like almost he shocked him. Boom, down.
See, I just need to get your attention long enough to get by you.
Yeah. But they were asleep, though.
Man.
But the game is totally different, obviously, for obvious reasons. You know,
that's where your dad was out there spinning.
Yeah, he was out there shaking and shaking.
Let me get away from these people.
But, guys, I mean, that was it. You were headhunting back then.
I need to, at some point, we need to ask your dad about playing that Raiders secondary, what that was like.
Mm. Well, my grandma was alive. She told a story about John Madden. And so my dad was getting busy on them cats. And my dad will tell you that, like, he told me the story. They went to, you know, both teams at the Super Bowl. And so there's, like, some sort of function that they both go to. So Bud Grant, you know, he was real strict. And he's like, we got to dress and, you know, we got to have a suit on. And, you know, you can't, you know, you got to dress up, right? Mm-hmm. So my dad said they had the Rose Bowl pull up, like, some function. The Raiders out there in biker suit, but you know, like, with like leather on and stuff, like they, you know, the Hell's Angels. And so my grandma was saying that she could hear John Madden because my dad was, you know, starting to get loose a little bit. He was like, "Break his legs! We want to break his legs! We gotta stop him! We want you to break his legs!" And then my grandma, she ain't played no big. She was mad. It was funny. She was all upset about it, and you know, whatever. But yeah, it's yeah. He said he played. I asked him about Dick Butkus, though. He's like, "Yeah, I played against him at the end of his career. He won none."
No, stop.
He was, but when Dick Butkus was at the end of his career,
okay,
he could barely move. But he said Dick Butkus tried him, though. So what Dick Butkus' thing was, he would come up to the line. He's like, "Hey," he was the biggest dude, like linebacker, and he would spit, like supposedly, like to get to try to intimidate
right.
you. But he said Dick Butkus back then, he couldn't, he wasn't nearly the Dick Butkus that he was.
Just mentally, not physically.
Yeah. Yeah, but he tried to drop the hammer on you.
Yeah, I can see that.
He's still the GOAT. Butkus is still
the GOAT. Oh, he was cold-blooded.
Butkus is still the GOAT in the middle.
Some of my favorite interviews still. I think it was like his Hall of Fame speech. He's
so
fell in love. He's like, "Yeah, just like hitting people. I didn't think it was that big of a deal."
When he hit Sanders from Detroit, he killed him.
Yeah.
And it was because Sanders peeled back on his teammate.
Charlie Sanders. It played tight end for the Detroit Lions. Yeah.
And he knocked one of his boys out. And then Dick Butkus was like, "Who did it?" He's like, 88. Two series later, he was out, man. Cold.
"Hey, I'm going to go ahead and give you these 15 yards, but you going night-night."
Yeah.
Legendary.
Yeah. You waking up next week. Yeah. Yeah. They said, I mean, Dick Butkus, I mean, he was.
Butkus, Nitschke, who's the other Eagle that played both ways?
Bednarik or whatever.
Chuck Bednarik. Yeah. Like,
Mike Curtis.
We need to spend a day going back Jack to Lambert. the real old meat and potatoes linebacker.
Yeah.
Just talking about the old meat and potatoes. Because people get caught up now and think we got some dudes. No, them cats.
Ruthless.
Ray Nitschke and company. Yeah, we need to talk about them folks.
They try to pile drive you. You know what I'm saying? Like, I'm dead serious, though.
No, I played C2. I peaked there.
They trying to, like, when you played against the Soul Patrol, with Ricky Jackson and them.
Ricky Vaughn.
Johnson and them.
Lamar Lathan.
And Pat Swilling. And then, like, sure. I'll say it real quick because I know we got up against the clock. Like, here's the difference. Sometimes when you go against some of, like, remember when Baltimore Ravens had Glover, Jonathan Ogden, they had Zeus, and they had that big Blackshear, Willie Blackshear. Mm-hmm. So they had they were all black offensive linemen, right? Yo, they were trying to murder you, Harrison. I'm talking about like anything possible. You running away, club you in the back, elbow in the back of your back. They were trying to break you. Because they thought it was funny. I'll say this real quick because we had Troy Evans on. Troy Evans got peeled back on. Jonathan Ogden runs over, looked over. He's like, "Young man, you got knocked the blank out." He's like, "But you got up though."
Real quick, I want to get this from Dirty Tony and the boys because he's true on that. That era was the closest to the NFL Blitz video game that there ever was.
It was.
You look at the tape, it's insane.
Just go back and find the old CBS NFL Today intro. Just the hits, man.
People would be appalled.
Oh my goodness. So good.
I sometimes tweet out the picture when I hit Michael Pittman. His helmet flew off. And I asked him, "You woke up from your nap?"
Yeah. Leave that anyway, man.
Yeah, he had them big old arms, though. Anyway, we'll take a quick break. We're going to get back on schedule. Jay Foreman, DP Harrison, we'll be right back.
Back to Old School with Foreman and Orman on 93.7 The Ticket and theticketfm.com.
What up? Trying to get back on schedule. Jay Foreman, DP Harrison. Story time of the old days, man. People probably think, like, you know what their first thing is? Like, they were a lot slower back then, so you had to hit harder.
Mm-mm, no, sir.
I think no, they looked sir. Slower because they were hurting more.
And the video was looked like it was always slower.
But, well,
that's a big part of it.
That was the production side. Yeah. It was always because they wanted you to feel the hit.
Well, it's also you can't just, they just didn't have the capability to shoot 60 frames a second. Yeah. You drop that down to 30, all of a sudden everything looks slower.
Yeah, you're just losing frames. You can see Terry Bradshaw's head getting suplexed onto his neck in slow motion.
Back then, the big thing was, until the NFL realized, like, the quarterbacks, you know, pretty much was like Peyton Manning and them, you know, that you guys were in the league. It was, you would have a stat of QB hits if you weren't getting sacks, but you hit the quarterback. I mean, we kept stats on that.
Yeah, I mean, that's what even at high school, like, obviously it changed really quick, but in high school, that was the mindset of my coaches. Yeah. Still was like, you lay out the quarterback if they're not going to give it up.
At any point, it by any means necessary.
Exactly.
Yeah, and so now you can't even breathe on these dudes.
Mm-hmm.
So
even if they have the ball, you got to roll off them as soon as they go to the ground. Like, yeah, that's where it gets a little too soft.
Like in the NFL where you can't land on them directly and stuff. But
you put your body weight on him.
Yeah. As you're trying to tackle. And now they're really good athletes too.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a lot different.
Well, it's like you got Lamar Jackson. It's like you got to try to like pull up the last second. Like,
yeah,
it's not great.
Yeah, exactly. So anyways, we got Kevin Meyer Corcomballa, Thirsty Thursday, bringing in some vibes. I think
he's here.
Oh, he's here. All right, so we're going to take a quick break, come back, top of the hour. Kevin's going to bring in some libations and obviously a ton of information. Jay Foreman, DP Harrison, we'll be right back.